This is your host Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I'm here with Katie.
Hello.
Katie's a little mascot sidekick, Charlie.
He is kind of asleep, so we
Oh,
might
he fell
actually be
asleep.
in a good situation right now, yeah.
Nick Davis
Hey.
and Joe Reed.
Hello.
Okay, before we break for Christmas, we'll talk about two movies that by the time you listen to this, I believe we'll be in lots of theaters. Lion is currently in not very many theaters, I think four or something, and
Oh, wow.
La La Land will be expanding, I think, on the 16th. So let's discuss. Two of the best movies of the year, if you ask me, but your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I'm not quite there, but I liked the both of them a good bit, I would say.
Well, let's.
Lion was more surprisingly than La La Land. I was kind of bracing for Lion to be just, I don't know, worse on like quite a few levels, and I was surprised by how much I liked it. I was sort of expecting to be kind of emotionally moved by it because the story itself just seems like, oh, this, boy gets estranged from his family in India and he can't find them again, and he ends up adopted by this Australian family, and then much later, when he's an adult, goes and tries to find them, sort of retrace his steps using technology, and does, and it was a big sort of true life story. I can't remember where it was written up, but there was an article that the whole movie was based on.
We
And I
also
was,
read a book.
oh, it was a book. Okay, for some reason I thought it was an article. Okay,
It might have started as an article.
yeah. But so just knowing that story, I was just like, all right, you're gonna make me cry, but like, let's see what else you got. And I think it's got plenty. I think it's a gorgeous looking movie. I think it takes its time with sort of the relationships and the kind of state of mind of the main character. I think Dev Patel is actually really good in the second half of the movie as the adult version of, what is his name? Saru?
Saru, yeah.
It's
He
been a bit.
thinks.
What's that? Yes, that's right.
He
Yeah.
thinks.
Yes. The little tag at the end explaining why the title of the movie is the title of the movie is maybe my least favorite part of the whole movie.
Yeah.
By then, I was all in.
It's definitely the, we now call it the internet of 2016,
Yes!
of obvious movie tags.
That's my best friend Will. Actually his least favorite thing ever is when movies use the title. So he's
Yeah.
always like, "Oh!" You can always hear him groan if a movie gets to its title and explains
I
the
saw
title.
Rules Don't Apply the other day, and that was every, I saw it with my friend Griffin, and every single time they said the title, we like turned to each other and he like did like air guitar and I like high-fived myself. It was
How many times do they say the title?
A
A lot.
lot. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Although I think they used all those times in the trailer.
Yeah. That's
They
true.
really didn't want you to forget what that movie was called.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so funny that it was untitled for so long.
While I was watching Lion, I had a really hard time kind of pinpointing like why, because I feel the same way you do, Joe, that I was kind of really bracing for impact with overdone emotions, and it's got a cute kid and tragedy, and like it's very straightforward. It's not like doing anything that you're not really expecting from this kind of movie, except just being good, and that's like such a non-useful critical opinion. But I was just impressed throughout by how it was like really well maintained, and every, it didn't take a false step in a area where you could just take so many false steps, and
Yeah,
I feel like we've seen it happen a lot of times.
I was especially impressed with all the stuff with Nicole Kidman, and that character doesn't actively call for sympathy, even though so many of the circumstances around that character would think like it would. But I thought those scenes were remarkably, I don't know, like the emotions that came through there were more complicated and more kind of mature than I was expecting.
Oh,
Yeah.
absolutely agreed there. Like, I mean, Katie, I don't think that's a useless critical opinion of what you're saying. Because I actually, that's exactly my feeling of it. Like, I was expecting something sort of generic and emotionally manipulative. Like, I don't know, like, this is mean to that movie because I don't really think it's a bad movie, but like, Philomena. I was expecting something more like middle brow, like, easy, and, like, Lion just seemed really just strong throughout. Like, yes, it has these emotionally, like, these very well-trod emotional paths that you've seen in, you know, lots of movies, but it just seemed very, like, serious about itself in a kind of beautiful way. Like, it didn't...
But also not, like, look at the poverty of these Indian children.
Right, no,
like,
that's what I mean.
In, like, a PSA way.
Right, but serious about, like, what story it wanted to tell and about, you know, like, the emotional underpinnings of being, like, an adopted child and of wanting to adopt children. Like, to me, it was, like, really serious about, yeah, the emotions rather than its genre, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I actually thought Philomena was the same way. That was another movie that I watched kind of preparing for one thing. I was impressed by how well it was handled, but I think Lion is probably better.
Mm-hmm. And since
Philomena Throwdown, I didn't know we were going there.
Well, I mean, after meeting Saru at an event at the Middleburg Film Festival, I was like, oh, we could totally have, you know, the Philomania thing again, because he's, like, really charming, and, you know.
And also the kid, Sonny Pawar, who plays the young crew. Sort of in the movie, he's so cute.
He's the cutest,
and he's
kid ever.
He's working the circuit Tremblay style.
Yeah, he's just adorable. His little voice in that movie when he keeps saying his brother's name, which is, like, heartbreaking to me. It's, like, the cutest thing ever.
Yeah.
But can we, since this podcast has been championing Bradford Young forever, can we, now that we've sufficiently explained to everyone his genius, can we move on to Greek Fraser, who I feel
amazing,
who I feel still is not getting the credit he deserves for his work, who shot Lion and also previously shot Zero Dark Thirty and Let Me In and Bright Star. Like, he's such a talent, and I feel like people don't talk about him.
I didn't even like the movie as much as you guys did, but I thought that the photography was great, and even a lot of the things, like all the shooting in darkness that he has to do in the mm-hmm. first part of the movie when Saru's trying to figure out where he is, that there were just some even real technical challenges that he totally met. And then it would be really easy for the first half of this movie to feel kind of visually spectacular, and mm-hmm. the second half to be stuck not feeling that way at all.
Right.
Or even just the cliches we've seen about how to film a home where you're out of place versus where you didn't feel that way. Like, and it just doesn't resort to a lot of that stuff. Like, I don't think it's totally without the kind of exoticizing of India sometimes, but I often felt that way more from kind of editing than I did from him. Mm. But I really liked the photography a lot.
Since you brought up Bradford Young, though, I think you guys talked about Arrival without me, but are we going to make that happen for him this year, finally?
I think that happen. I will say that.
I think finally, yeah. That's why I feel safe we need to move on to our next target of getting... I don't even know if I'm saying his name correctly, but Greg Fraser? I don't know. But
we learned the lesson in 2016 that we can't take anything, any outcome that we think is going to happen for granted, so...
That's true.
Bradford until those nominations are read.
Yes.
Particularly because I was at a trivia night a few weeks ago, and I was there before the rest of my team was there, so I was just sort of, like, holding the table. And I'm listening to the table behind us, which is all these, like, film school nerd bros or whatever, talking about Arrival and how much worse than Sicario it was because it didn't have Roger Deakins doing the cinematography. And I was literally, like, claw marks in the table.
Right. Oh, God. I would be like fight me.
Arrested, bro.
I wanted to turn around so bad and just be like, you guys are all really stupid right now.
This is what comes of hero worship, just like directors get. Like, just because this person shot it does not mean it's better than everything else.
They were very thankful that Roger Deakins would be back for the Blade Runner remake, so.
Oh, good. That's a great use of his time.
The great use of everybody's time. Right. That's, I mean, God.
It is weird that the only Deakins credit from 2016 is Hail Caesar, which, anyway. Tangent, but
which is kind
of a weird year.
Which is a beautiful movie.
Yeah, I think he actually does a real. I'm very pro Hail Caesar in many ways.
Me too.
I was glad to see it show up on the NBR list.
I actually have to admit, I didn't love the cinematography of Arrival.
Were you at that? Nick, did you not say something?
I was, and I saw you clawing the table. I was like, we have to talk about something else.
Wait, Nick, not to draw distinctions, but I
might have even been dating him first in this group. I'm not sure. We all sort of fell into polyamory at the same time. But I mean, I liked it. I didn't. It was not my favorite of all of his movies, I guess. Okay. Whatever.
Well, I think that you just destroyed the narrative arc of this podcast we're talking about.
Wait, Nick, was that it really awkward when you went home with Bradford for Thanksgiving? Like, did you tell his family this?
Brad, you're not mad. No, he says he's not mad about it. He says that I don't have to.
Take it.
Yeah. He's interested in my honesty.
It's beautiful. That's what strong relationships are built on.
It's true.
It's what makes it work. You got it.
So, La La Land, let's move on from Lion.
Yeah.
We have fans of Lion, but everybody likes it, at least, right? We're sort of on the same page as we were with Manchester.
I like Lion less than you like Manchester, I think, but...
Okay.
But yeah.
We're just trying to
make our narrative thornier, this podcast, Nick.
<That's> me.
What was your least favorite thing about it?
I guess it was just that I didn't have a particularly strong reaction to it either way. Mm-hmm. Like, there were moments that I thought were pretty strong, like the dinner scene where Mantosh doesn't show up and Saru can't believe anybody would be surprised about that. There's a whole lot going on for every character in that scene, and I thought that whole scene was really impressive. So there were some kind of standout scenes, and there were some other scenes that felt like, I definitely don't need to watch Rooney Mara and Dev Patel like hide behind trees and traffic signs while they walk somewhere, while they fall in love, while I want to say Indian music plays. Like, I don't know, whatever. but mostly it was just kind of sort of middle of the road for me.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. La La Land.
Ta-da!
So am I the only one who completely loved it?
I was not into it for the first hour. By the second, I felt more swept. I was more getting there, and it really had to do with the two leads. But part of my thing with Damien Chazelle is that, like, you've had several opportunities to prove to me that you can see past the two main characters in any of the movies that you make, and why can't you do that?
Yeah, I think La La Land definitely would have benefited from other characters that are of any worth than the two leads.
Yeah.
But I also, for as much as I'm sort of mediocre, I think the movie is mediocre through the middle, I think it's surprising to me that people wouldn't like that opening number. I was so swept up.
People don't like the opening number?
I've spoken to at least a few people, and I think, Nick, you are one of them who did not care for
it. Yep.
I thought it was so fun and so good and so sort of impressive and set a tone in a really good way. I was very kind of, it kept me, that sort of like fueled me through, I think, probably that first half of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the opening number was the part where I felt what everyone else says they feel from the whole movie, where I was just like grinning watching that opening.
Yeah.
And it got triggered for me from there. But wait, Nick, tell me what you don't like about it.
I mean, part of it was just an experiential, like, I don't think this is that fun. Like, you're acting like this is super fun. Like, I sort of felt like I don't know. I felt like those Fanta commercials that used to play before the movies. You know, like, here's a whole bunch of people, and they're all in different primary colors, and look what they're doing. Like, and I think the songs in La La Land are pretty lame, and that was one that felt kind of lame. I don't know. I just didn't have that. I didn't really enjoy it, even though I could tell how much the movie was confident that I was.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, I feel like in general, Damien Chazelle, that's my response to his directing. Like, I feel like his showmanship and his strenuousness is so foregrounded. Even in a movie like this that seems to want you to experience it as like light and charming. I mean, it's not all that. There's like emotional layers to it, but he's just so way out in front of his own movies, and even has already decided when you will be wowed repeatedly, that I feel like I'm watching that Liza Minnelli turns on a lamp. That's what his directing feels like to me. It's like, just make the fucking movie. Like, stop with all of this. Like,
that might be the best.
See your own movie past you.
That might be the best comparison I've ever heard, even though I love the movie. Somehow I had never seen.
Oh, this is just a party. Just go to the party. Now we're going to screen the camera all the way around because best cinematography. Okay.
Oh. It's funny that we started, though, with him not being able to see beyond the two leads, because when I received my screener for La La Land, I was just giggling because I always read, as soon as I get the screeners, I always read what they're writing under Consider This, because I just think it's amusing. I know it's all contractual, but I like to think of it as something else. I like to think of it as them actually thinking everything that they're listing is worthwhile, but I was like, giggling about like best supporting actor and best supporting actress because I was
J.K.
really?
Simmons and John Legend.
Yeah. I was really? Everybody in that movie is like, you know, completely, like that movie can only see the leads, but Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are both so great in it that I don't care. It's a romantic drama. They live or die on the central romance.
So, all right. So I think Ryan Gosling is good, and I like seeing him be fun and, like, charming, and he did this in The Nice Guys as well. But that character for me is so obnoxious. And all I could think the whole time I was watching this movie is John Legend is right. You need to get with the modern times. Stop being so goddamn nostalgic and do something new. And I feel, and that, like, it seems really minor, but I feel like that really hampered me, especially in the middle part of the movie, because you've got her pursuing a goal that's, like, very clear, and you know what she wants to do, and he's just like, no, I just want to stay true to the jazz clubs of the 50s, and this, like, idealized, like, whiter than it probably was version of the past, and that nostalgia, and I think the movie shares some of this nostalgia as well, just felt so, like, not useful in this kind of really interesting vision of a modern Los Angeles that I think Emma Stone was living in, and then this dude that honestly like didn't feel worth her time.
I actually thought that the tension between being very stuck in the past and, I mean, the movie doesn't really know what to do with it, but that whole subplot of John Legend telling him, you know, that what John Legend's telling him about, like, you have to, like, loosen up about only recreating the past is actually really fascinating, because the movie seems to be siding with no, recreate the past.
Yeah.
Even though what the movie is actually doing is what John Legend's character is doing, of trying to modernize something that is nostalgic. So I thought that was a fun sort of disconnect between what the movie thought of itself and what the movie actually was.
See, I so appreciate it being a modern musical, and Nathaniel, I saw you tweet this, that, like, a modern movie musical is rare and risky, and we should really appreciate it, and I totally agree with that. But I think the movie is so nostalgic that it doesn't really, it doesn't commit to that. It doesn't let itself become modern. It, like, you know, references Rebel Without a Cause and takes place in these studio backlots, and it's filmed in modern-day Los Angeles, but it just spends so much time being like, oh, but the past was so much better, which I don't think it has to be able to tell a story.
And particularly because Emma Stone does not feel like an old-fashioned actress to me.
No.
Remember when she was in that terrible Woody Allen movie and seemed...
Oh, yeah,
like
she was so out of her depth in that one, yeah.
Just so out of place because, like, she's... I think her charm is so very modern.
Yes.
And I thought it does work in the way... for the movie, when the movie talks about the two of them being a little bit of a clash of styles. But... I think I agree with you that they don't really do enough with his character. At some point, they just sort of decide, the movie just sort of decides that, like, her actualization is going to be enough, and that he's going to end up being sort of decoration for that actualization by the end, and he'll be sort of a totem for her by the end.
I can't disagree with that criticism, but I also find it a relief that it swings that way for once, with the woman's journey being more important.
Definitely.
And I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, and she carries that actualization. Like, I do think she's really terrific in this. And, you know, you get scenes like there's the audition she does really early in the movie where she's kind of giving her all and there's an assistant kind of barging in the background that, like, that really work. They work with that modern LA thing and she really kills it. And there's, like, it seems to be in sync. And then I think when it, I feel like it thinks to be able to have, like, a tap dance number in the middle of it, it has to, like, have this old fashioned gloss over it. And I feel like that detracts from what the movie really could have been about.
Interesting.
But I love musicals, and I don't want to take it away. I don't want to take the joy that this movie has brought people away from. Not that like I can single handedly do that, but I don't like being like, oh, you're so wrong to love La La Land, because so many people get joy out of it that I get out of other musicals. So, mm-hmm. You know, yay musicals, keep them coming.
But I do feel like the songs like Nick sort of mentioned.
That too.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, sort of. What you had playing off of what you had said earlier, I feel like the songs in something like Moana are a lot catchier and a lot more resonant for me than the songs in La La Land on balance.
Yeah, and it drives me crazy that La La Land abandons the musical numbers for the middle section. Like, it feels like to like tell a story, it has to stop being a musical, which really drove me crazy.
Yes. Well, that's maybe my biggest criticism of the movie is that exactly.
It's interesting that that's such a problem with modern musicals because. You know, Disney does that all the time too. Like Frozen just suddenly is not a musical after a while.
Yeah, and that's what I really like about Moana is that it really kept up the music even in like its biggest emotional moments, which is if you're a musical, like you have every ability to do that.
Yes.
But even Moana, for as much as I really liked that movie and I did, is maybe not structured as like a musical first. Like it feels like with a lot of these movies, just like just put in the bones of where the songs are going and what the songs are doing and then put your movie on top of that. And just like, just try that once. Like, and see what it does.
Or like, just watch Sing Street again, you know? Just do it.
Honestly.
Like the fact that we're just still going to be stuck talking about the wrong musical or, well, not the wrong musical, but like clearly if my problem with like La La Land is that Damien Chazelle just can't stop showing off, like it would stand to reason that I'm in the John Carney camp, right? That like those movies seem to be just kind of coalescing in and of themselves. Like he's not that interested in getting in your face about it. But then again, like I thought the one of the real low points in La La Land was that musical number of the roommates all going out on the town. Like the song was bad. The red, blue, yellow, green costumes seemed like really predictable and kind of boring. Like the staging just seemed really flat. That like after that, because what I liked about the movie was how much character Emma Stone and Roger Deakins, Jesus, Ryan Gosling were coming. There's a May December romance I'd really love to see. Like, Emma Stone and Roger Deakins. Fall in love. Like I think their acting is so good that even like that scene where they're fighting about you know whether he's just going to keep selling out all this time, like at the level of scripting that scene seemed kind of odd because it was like the movie's a little bit unclear about whether she gets what kind of music he's performing. Like she goes to that concert and she's like kind of surprised to find out that this is the aesthetic that he's just, it's all kind of weird. But watching them act in close up for like a long 10 minute scene when it really does stop feeling like a musical for a while, they were so good that I'd rather have seen a lot of
the fact that like the beats of their romance are so perfunctory and so like prescripted. Just it's that scene that you're talking about is just like, well, you know, Chazelle checks his watch and is just like, well, time for the argument scene. And it's just like, okay, well, I've seen the romance comedy too, but like,
and that drove me crazy.
And for the argument scene, I will shoot them in shot reverse close-ups, and both of them will be at the edge of the frame to let you know that they're feeling very at the edge. Like, oh my
God. You guys are making me crazy. I love this movie.
I'm being.
You have plenty of allies.
I don't actually think like a doing it up big as a director is necessarily a. Distraction and the heightened genres, like if it was less ambitious than it is, I don't think it would be as good. You know, like yes, it's
I just don't
yes, it's the direction is very visible, but I'm saying in some genres that's not a bad thing. To me.
Even in this genre, that's not a bad thing. Like, I'll watch Moulin Rouge as often as you want me to, but I don't think he's as good at the things that he acts like he's good at, and then makes... I mean, part of it is that he just keeps insisting on making these movies about jazz. Three now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as somebody who can't stop taking over his own movie and then can't see past two characters in a movie, like, you get all these, like, speeches about how it's all about making things up in the moment and improvisation and teamwork and interplay. It's like, you have not managed to write a script like that. You certainly can't direct like that. Like, this, he just feels in real disharmony from what he says it's about. And I don't know. I didn't think his staging of musical numbers was very good. It was just showy.
Nick, what did you think of the dream ballet at the end? I don't want to spoil it too much, but I think saying there's a dream ballet at the end is too much of a spoiler.
I think, yeah.
What did I think of it?
Yeah, just because I thought, I mean, in terms of musical numbers, like, I get some of your skepticism, but I thought that was pretty accomplished. I'm curious. I want to hear you take it down.
No, I mean, I guess, like, by the end of it, I was sort of definitely more swept up, and by that point, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling had done enough work that I felt invested in the characters. So, like, I do remember feeling pretty, like, surprisingly attached to the movie by then, although I was kind of giving them the credit for that, but it may have been that I liked that number better, too. I don't remember it very well, but...
Yeah, I think what I obviously like the movie more than any of you, but I think the one criticism of it that I can totally get behind is actually Joe, right after we saw it, you were tweeting about how, like, people will forgive a lot of a movie if it opens strong and ends strong.
Yeah.
And I think the last, you know, the sort of epilogue, you know, this, you know, dream ballet, you know, which is one way to describe it, but not, it won't give you a sense of exactly what it is, I think, super ambitious and complicated and emotionally, like, daring.
Yeah.
For the movie to end on, and I just, to me, that was just like, yes, I'm, this movie, whatever little qualms I had, that ending just sort of decimated them.
Well, Nathaniel, when it wins Best Picture, history will be on your side.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. History is so tricky with Oscar. Who knows? Maybe everyone will turn on it in 2 years. You never know. But I mean, I'm not saying it's my favorite movie of the year. I still haven't picked a favorite, oddly enough. I think it's been such a good year that I like so many movies. I'm having trouble picking my number one.
That's a good problem.
It is a good problem, and it's, like, really uncommon for me. Usually I have, like, one or two that are way out front, even if I think it's a good year.
Yeah.
And this year I'm kind of, like, I have, like, seven movies I kind of love the same amount, and I'm like, what do I do?
Classy problems.
Yes.
Does anybody else have a clear favorite?
I mostly do, but I feel like I still want to see the last few big movies of December that I haven't seen yet. I mean, there's a chance I could be blown away by Silence. It's not out of the question.
Yeah, I have a clear favorite of what I've seen, but there's still some glaring titles that I need to catch first before I feel confident.
I think I'm going to try to rewatch, like, the seven or so that are tied for number one right now.
Yeah.
Because I have to make some decisions, you know, for top 10 lists and such.
Yeah, I don't think I'm necessarily writing a top 10 for Decider, because we're doing our year-end stuff slightly differently. So I may be able to wait a little bit.
You can fudge it for a while, not commit.
I can just wait till I've seen, you know, till I feel like I've seen, because I want to see Silence and Tony Erdmann, and there's one more that I wanted to see definitely before I make any kind of top 10 decision.
I keep
Passengers.
I keep putting off Tony Erdmann. I just like that. I'm having such trouble committing to the running time. This time of year is so busy.
What I hear about it is that it doesn't feel that long.
Right, but even if it doesn't feel that long, that's such a time commitment when you're so busy.
So I get you. Yep.
Listen, I think that's what, like, I think Jackie is my favorite of the movies that I've seen this year. And its running time is one of its best qualities.
Yes. It really gets in and gets out and does its job.
Yeah, man. More 90-minute movies in 2017, please.
This was fun. Happy holidays, everyone listening. 2016 has been a very rough year, but have a great holiday season. Let's make 2017 as good as possible. And
Jesus.
I mean, I had a baby in 2016, so I don't know what you guys are complaining about.
That's true.
Right. Well, see, yeah, and you get, like, your 2017 at least is going to have all those fun things of, like, because I think, like, wait, how long ago was Charlie born now?
5 months, almost.
5 months. See, you get the, like, the really super fun age range is coming up, or, like, the the 8 months to a year, that's, like, such a fun...
Yeah, I also have the benefit of a child who probably won't remember the Trump administration, so it's I get to kind of live in his bubble.
Love it.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah. You have to let me babysit so I cannot live, so I can also live in that bubble, Katie.
Yeah, you're all welcome to come over and have Charlie smile at you with the lack of knowledge of the world outside him. It's very helpful.
It's the one time the complete... what do they even call that? That childhood development stage where they think everything revolves around them.
Oh, I don't know, but that stage definitely exists.
Right, but also that it's the one time that that's been super useful.
Yeah.
If only we could all experience that.
When we put it in good context, it makes more sense why Joe walks out of, like, Manchester by the Sea and Little Men being like, compared to everything else, this seemed kind of buoyant. I don't know.
Okay. Happy holidays, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Christmas bells are ringing. Christmas bells are ringing. Christmas bells are singing on TV at Saks.
Honest living, honest living, honest living, honest living.
Can't you spare a dime or two? Here before the great love God's born you.
Honest living,
you'll be merry, I'll be merry, though merry ain't in my vocabulary. No sleigh bells, no Santa Claus, no Yule log, no tinsel, no holly, no hearth, no
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer.
Like crying.
No room at the Holiday Inn. Oh no. And it's beginning to snow.
How about a fur in perfect shape, owned by an MBA from uptown? I got a tweed broken in by a greedy.
Have to do this.
Hush your mouth, it's Christmas.
I do not deserve you, angel. Give.
Wait!
All you do.
What's on the floor?
Give.
Let's see some more.
To show.
No, 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 no.
How you've touched me. So
kiss me, it's beginning to snow.
She said, "Whoa." Got any semen?
I'm cool.
Got any X, any smack, any horse, any jookie boogie boy, any blow?
Hey,
hey,
I just wanna say I'm sorry for the way.
Forget it.
I blew up. Can I make it up to you?
How?
Dinner party?
That'll do.
Hey, lover boy, cutie pie. You steal my client, you die.
You didn't miss me, you won't miss her. You'll never lack for customers.
Way to the stage.
So
there's magic in the air this evening, magic in the air. The world is at her best, you know, when people love and care. The promise of excitement is one the night will keep. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas. Says hello, and everyone is family. We're having so much fun. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas. 'Tis a season to be jolly and joyous. With a burst of pleasure, we feel it arrive. It's a season when the saints can employ us to spread the news about peace and to keep love alive. Faith is in our hearts today, we're shining like the sun, and everyone can feel it, the feeling's running deep. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas Day.
Somehow